This is Edwin K. Morris, and you are about to embark on the next Pioneer Knowledge Services Because You Need to Know, a digital resource for you to listen to folks share their experience and knowledge around the field of knowledge management and nonprofit work. If your company or organization would like to help us continue this mission and sponsor one of our shows, email bynTK@pioneer-ks.org.
Hello, everyone. My name is Leila Luculeac-Pardașuc. Îmi pare bine să fiu aici. Am zis că o să încep în limba mea nativă, în română. Sunt din Făgăraș, un oraș din Transilvania, România. Back to English now. I live in Malaga, Spain, originally from Transylvania, Romania. The thing that I have learned is always to be teachable. And what I absolutely love working in is the tech and innovative sector. And my most fantastic job and work experience was actually when I decided to start my own company, which was 3 years ago, a business strategy and trying to bring companies with a shared purpose together. I'm currently working on this. You'll hear more about it during this session, the strategy of kindness with different companies in tech space and industry 4.0 space. But I'm also working with Universidad Europea as a professor and researchers. I wrote a second article in a series that I try to develop strategies. What can we learn from Formula One? So this second article is on ESG and sustainability and what can we learn from the Formula One competing teams in that sense. How do I like to stay connected to people is by creating trusted online spaces where we can connect, where we can share ideas like we are doing now, where we can share know-how. Some examples in that sense, the Shared Wisdom in Industry 4.0 community that I've built it, and Friday online coffees.
So are you saying you're kind of a social creature?
Yes.
Is that from your upbringing or your heritage, or you learned that on the way?
I think I learned that on the way, but also something with which I've been raised to do. My mother is a teacher. So probably I learned a lot in that aspect from her. Yeah. My father is a social person. Apart from his work, he plays the guitar. He likes to be on stage and has this this experience and this ability to interact with people. So I think that I got a lot from both of them.
So that's an interesting concept that you're put forth. Both your parents were impactful to your personality and your, well-rounded ability to fit in and or inquire to fit in to a social structure. And that's really a kind of a key ingredient to what you're about to explain to the audience in the strategy of kindness. How do you generate conversation and how do you build a community that's kind? That's my words. I mean, that's really what you're talking about is how do you make better people? All right. I mean, it is all reliant on communications and intent would be my philosophy. But where do you find this strategy that you developed? What was your inspiration to even start that concept?
Well, it was an inspiration from different fields. It was inspiration not only from my work and what I've seen from the people that I worked with, from the teams that I was putting together. I've seen a lot of focus on KPIs that for me weren't enough. Mm. They weren't defining the real results. The focus on soft skills. I also seen that and how can we merge the two. So the business world with this education, with universities, is something that I started working with. So I started working as a university teacher. That was my first job and researcher. Mm. As an economist, of course, I've seen the need of, well, I need to get the practical examples. I need to be working in different sectors with different companies to be able to make that connection. Mm. That was one way that showed me, okay, this is something that has value because I've done research, I've got that feedback from students, from other teachers. We need to make that connection to build that bridge. So how do we start to do that?
So what's the answer? How do you start? How do you build a community that actually authentically communicates through conversation?
Well, I built 3 C's within the strategy of kindness. So that would help to start. The first one is the competitive advantage. Why did I pick the competitive advantage first? Because it's usually where businesses go to. I want to be competitive. I want to have this competitive advantage. If we start with that, which is actually the last step, right, after implementing the strategy and getting the feedback from the market. But if within the strategy of kindness, we analyze the competitive advantage, what you have as a person, as a company, it doesn't matter. You can apply this within a team. You can apply it within a group of people that you want to work with. You can apply it on a larger scale within a company. If we start looking at the competitive advantage, we can see what are our main skills. How can we include the kindness within our competitive advantage? And that question leads us to a first set of actions that we can take. Then the second C is...
Before you go on to the second C, so are you saying that all players have to engage in order to get this to roll out well?
Of course, yes.
You said regardless of the team size, and when you said any organization, I'm like, well, I'd say families are probably a good place to start, because that seems to be lacking, at least what I see in most organizations, that there is a lack of, I guess it's just emotional intelligence and basically empathy for others. Is that easily kind of an overview of what you're trying to target?
Exactly. So you need to include that empathy and that kindness within your overall strategy and to base it. So it doesn't matter what your competitive advantage is, but if you are able to include that kindness, to include empathy, to include that openness to collaboration, it automatically builds on whatever competitive advantage you have.
Is it the icing on the cake?
It could be. That's a good way to look at it.
I like cake. So
me too.
You got me.
Me too.
I'm in.
So yes, I'm going to use that and quote you if that's okay.
You bet. So the second C is?
The second C is collaborative leadership. So once you have this openness, you start building this collaboration and leadership between all the actors within the project or company. So again, it depends on how you want to take this forward. And this needs a bit of training, needs flexibility, needs all the communication training, and start building on that. But that is the second step.
Are you basically pointing and saying that there is a leader of this, or are you saying that all participants have a role as being a leader in this?
How I use it and how I collaborate with leaders implementing this, it's common a joint effort. So it's not only just the leader inducing this and, okay, this is what we have to do and I want to collaborate and I want to build this and this. It's creating leaders and making leaders within the entire team.
All right. Moving on to C3.
Moving on to C3. Yes. And the last one, it's creating networks. So once you have 2 C's built in, you automatically can start creating networks. So the trust and what you are building within the team, everyone will bring in another person or another company or another idea. And therefore, the network gets bigger. So as we are here talking today, if we are building this trust and collaboration, automatically we are going to attract like-minded people that are likely to do the same or join our efforts, or we will join their efforts. This is the creating of networks. So within the strategy of kindness, I try to find ways or initiatives that can create those networks.
Does that lead to any exclusion? When you say like-minded folks, in the world of knowledge management, it's a similar structure is that what I find is you tend to gravitate towards those that are similar in behavior. So therefore, that communication and network is easily facilitated. Not everybody in an organization is like-minded, right?
Exactly.
That seems to be a major oomph, a major hurdle. How do you approach it?
I should have mentioned, so if we have this collaborative leadership and each of the member of the team is a leader in its own, they would attract like-minded people like yourself, but with the other leader will attract like-minded people. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, and this is where it comes, the diversity, more ideas, bringing people together.
So what's the strategy for mitigating those that are counter like-minded or opposite like-minded? I don't even know the term I'm trying to say. You know what I mean? They're the opposite of that. They are the 180 to where you want to go. Do you give them opportunity to join or at least come invite? And then if they choose not to participate, do you say bye-bye?
Within the strategy of kindness, you encourage all ideas. So especially creating a space, let's see how we can create a space where we can not only generate ideas, and therefore you will see that if you have people coming in from different sectors, different experience, different opinions, is where you generate more ideas, of course. So that's one plus. If you see it working, you see it in action, you are going to apply it again and again. And apart from that, when you find different ways, this depends, different spaces that work for the team working together. It might be an online safe space. It could be a combination of both. It could be generating session outside the office, like the Friday coffees, that's a safe space. Just to know that it is a space where you can share your idea, not to be afraid that that idea is going to be stolen and used by other people.
As you were crafting your answer to the what do you do with folks that don't want to play or don't play well together, I throw this out there because it has to be kind of this obvious, but maybe not to all, and I want to share this, is that sometimes it's good to have a devil's advocate, meaning they are not like-minded, they are opposite of wherever the bus is going, but they could add value because they're not thinking the group think.
Exactly.
I would say put some icing on that cake and say, look, I know you're not drinking the Kool-Aid with us here, but your opinion, your participation as a devil's advocate, meaning you don't have to change the way you think. You don't have to change anything about your internal philosophy, but in order to stay engaged, we ask you to play the role of not thinking like us and bring us up counterpoints to help us make this better.
I think you're definitely right. So there are a lot of examples that come to mind of companies that build new apps and products. You need those people to come in with those ideas. What do you do in a classroom? Because you need to integrate everyone. So one of my favorite methods to use in a classroom is the six thinking hats, where you have six different colors. And when you put on a hat with a color, you have to think in that manner. So,
Wait a minute. Are you just saying that you give people like a script and say, okay, now you're going to act like this, or you're going to act like that, because you're going to make them force themselves to try to perceive something from that point, from that view?
Of course. So we did a lot of exercises like this.
Brilliant.
I'm glad you like it.
That's brilliant. Oh my good God. That's awesome.
I'm glad
awesome.
You like it. So we
brilliant.
Can talk.
What are the six hats?
It's Edward de Bono's six hats.
So this is not yours.
No, of course. It's a book,
okay.
A really good book that you can look into. So you have the blue hat, which acts like the moderator and the leader, leading a bit and seeing that assignments, tasks are in order. Then you have the white hat. Within the white hat, if you wear the white hat, you need to analyze all the data, information. So no feelings involved, just strictly science and data. The red hat, on the other hand, is all about feelings, your hunches, instinct, your intuition. So you have to analyze everything by wearing that hat and being very emotional about your analysis. The black hat, of course, is about all the negative, right? To analyze, it's exactly as you mentioned before. So what do you do with those people who only see difficulties, potential problems? Well, let's see, what potential problems have you detected? So wearing the black hat can do that. The yellow hat is on the values, the benefits, why something might work. So it's on the positive side. And then you have the green hat, which is all about creativity, about alternatives, bringing in new ideas. And you can switch. So you can do meetings like this. And from a week to another, you can switch within that. You can use them within a Scrum Agile methodology form. And within the team, everyone to wear a different hat. Mm-hmm. So you can use it in brainstorming session, however you want to adapt.
That is a great exercise because it strengthens, it has the potential of strengthening a global perspective in the individual. If they really engage the concept and jump in with both feet, it could really benefit them personally as well as the organization overall. So who's the source of that?
It's Edward De Bono.
Well, I will definitely dive into that and find out more because that is an instrument that sounds like it's easy to do. It's low impact as far as resources, and it gives a fresh participation anticipation of the individual, especially if you don't assign it prior to the meeting that you hand them out at the meeting, then wow, that could be a lot of fun.
It is. And you can see which role you like better. This is also one of the advantages. Mm-hmm. So continuing on the strategy of kindness, it's at all about placing people at the heart of business and at the heart of digital transformation. And this was the key ingredient that I detected that works within the companies that I work with the people that I collaborate, to not be afraid to share. Even if you do not have that information, maybe put them in contact with someone who does, build in that type of business relationship. You know that you'll have people to go to in need of. It creates that network that you can count on, and that gives you the flexibility.
But I hear that, but it requires somebody to have awareness. So how do you implant that? Because not everybody has that.
Well, I was lucky enough to discover and get to know people who have awareness in different sectors, different technologies, leadership. So this is how I started to build my network and then said, okay, what kind of spaces can we create so that we can share that and see what other participants can bring to the table, what their know-how is, what their expertise is.
It kind of reminds me of like grade school experience of show and tell, that you're going to have a participatory engagement of showing something of yourself in order to show that you're vulnerable and you're willing to share, and there is a feeling of safety in the space.
Yes, I think that's a really good point there. I was thinking that together with some of the partners that I'm working with in the Industry 4.0 space, with Santinella, which is a smart manufacturing solution company, and with the Industry 4.0 Club from the US, we said, how can we share and exchange? And we created the shared wisdom in Industry 4.0. So it was pretty much, as you said, coming in within that online space, one event per month, show and tell. So yeah, you're right.
So how do you install kindness? We're bridging technology with people.
Exactly.
As the world may have noticed, most of the social media out there, I would say, is not kind. How do you build in this concept that everybody plays by a certain level of rules here, rules of engagement in the process of building this community?
I think that we all have it within us, and it just needs someone to trigger it. to feel that you are in a safe space where you can share. Well, as you know, the Industry 4.0, it has all this focus right now on automation, smart technologies. Mm-hmm. We have all this focus on AI. How can we integrate AI? It doesn't matter how it will help. We just need to integrate it some way or another.
Yeah. So it can, just make it happen. Make exactly, it happen. Yeah.
Exactly. So sometimes it overlooks the human element. Within the strategy of kindness, I think that we can align the goals of digital transformation of the Industry 4.0 with the general well-being, because when you encourage this communication, when you involve everyone in decision-making, they feel like, okay, my thoughts matter. So they get more involved. The results are different. We can measure them. We have all these tools that we can measure them. Let's just add some extra KPIs. We don't have to change the way we are doing things.
Yeah.
Just everything. No, we can use exactly what we have. Even in marketing, we have those KPIs. Perfect. Let's measure also how the business relationship is being built. We have AI. Why not use it? AI could come in and assess our connection, how we are communicating. It can give us data on that.
You talk about data, and we're talking about technology, and you keep saying 4.0 or 4.0. You're an educated person. Why do people say 4.0 when it's actually a zero?
Well,
can you explain that to me?
I
know, right? Exactly. It's 4.0. There's no letter in it. It's like, where did the letter come from? Anyways, that's a pet peeve of mine because I see it used a lot. 3.0, 2.0. There's no O. That's a zero. That I'm glad you
can use the 5.0 already, the Industry 5.0 already, because we are at that stage.
Okay, so let's talk about stages here because I'm trying to get a definition in my mind. What is this progression actually cataloging in these iterations? What is changing in industry? What is 4 versus 5? What is it?
It's basically the sustainability part within the whole digitalization. So to have a sustainable digital transformation and to include the ESG, mm-hmm. environmental, social, and governance component within everything that you are doing, basically.
It sounds like I would classify the same concept in the world of knowledge management, right? That it's a sustainability feature of an organization. It's a resource that is either untapped or tapped or partly used resource that an organization can build and use for that competitive advantage. But here again, with the icing on the cake mentality, every iteration of advance, every iteration of progress with technology and organization structures and behaviors has to pull the people to it. You can't just roll out and say, look, we're at 4.0 now, everybody's going to do this. The socialization is the key ingredient in this trusting behavior, this trusting environment, in order to get people to participate. So how do organizations combat that? And I'm going to guess you're going to tell me it's with the strategy of kindness.
The kindness not only with working with people, but you can apply the same principle, being kind to the environment, to the society. So then you also tackle the sustainability, the ESG reporting. So automatically when you act within that mindset, you get better results within that space. It's very difficult, especially for SMEs. You cannot invest that much. You need to invest in digitalization, digital transformation. Now I need to invest in sustainability. How do I do the ESG reporting? It's too much. It is a connection between the two. Why not work within that?
I pulled up a McKinsey and Company article that says, what are Industry 4.0, the fourth industrial revolution, and 4IR? Let me just read what they have in this just to see how this resonates with you. Industry 4.0, not O, also called the fourth industrial revolution, or 4IR, more acronyms, is the next phase in the digitization of the manufacturing sector, driven by disruptive trends, including the rise of data and connectivity, analytics, human-machine interaction, and improvements in robotics. So this sounds pretty futuristic, and it does not sound like Well, maybe it is. Maybe all industry, all manufacturing would look at this the same lens that this matters. But I'm trying to think if there's an industry that this doesn't apply to. Have you seen an industry that, like, yeah, we're not worried about that?
From what I've seen now, but of course I work mainly with companies that activate within Europe or the US. I think all companies see the need and use how we can use data, how we can use mm-hmm. information, yeah. how we can digitalize, including agriculture, including food and beverage manufacturing. So I see this. But it's also because I teach at Mastery in Industry 4.0.
Now you see, you can't not think of that now.
Well, in Spanish is 4.0, so.
Okay.
The examples that we see there and how do we prepare the students that are, the majority of them are already working. So we wanted to have a master where you can make that connection, right? And you mm-hmm. come in with real case studies from the sector, from the industry. But it's true that now they also see the need of the sustainability side. If we were to focus on that as well and on the soft skills for engineers and in the manufacturing sector, it would be easier. I've seen students tell me, look, now knowing about ESG and sustainability, I know that the app that I'm developing for the production line, some data from there, I can give to the chief sustainability officer mm-hmm. to put within the ESG reporting without me having to develop right. something extra or invest more time or money.
You talk about the skill sets, and I want to pull back to this McKinsey report or article. They bring up the vitality of the job requirements are going to have to change as the hiring continues and the output or the participation of the employee or contractor or whatever has to be elevated a little bit in what their performance is rated on. But I want to read this from the article. In Europe, 94% of surveyed executives believe that the balance between hiring and reskilling should be equal or tip toward reskilling. So this report is saying that the executives are saying, hey, we need to pull back on the whole hiring. It's just as important to reskill people, right, to give them opportunity to change their skill sets. And they talk about this in a phased approach. The end-to-end skill transformation has three phases. I'm reading directly from this article, and I'll put the article in the web notes of this podcast. The first step is scout. Analyze the skills required to achieve a company's ambitions. Number two is shape. Identify talent gaps that must be addressed and design the program infrastructure to address them. Sounds pretty logical. And number three, shift. Develop and implement content and delivery mechanisms to train workers at scale. So in that report, they are putting resources towards building a better workforce. And I keep saying better, and I know that's not the phrase that should be used, but that's what I keep hearing is that it's like sharpening a knife. You keep honing a knife to make it sharper. You're making an organization as sharp as it can by adding value to the workforce. How do you feel about that?
It's a really interesting comparison. Well, with sharpening the knife and that we are speaking all about the strategy of kindness.
Wow. All right. Sharpen the pencil. Sharpen the pencil. How about sharpen the
yes,
pencil?
Yes. That could be. When I did my presentation, so that one of the best advices that I got is to always be teachable. And I think this is the answer that we are looking for when we are hiring someone.
So you're going to ask in the interview, are you teachable?
No.
No.
Okay. Exactly. You need to see how you can detect that. How do you detect that in a person? What kind of projects you can get them involved in so that you can see that. It also applies to the people who are doing the hiring. Now we need to change, or the people who are doing the teaching, I'm doing the teaching, I need to change and adapt the way that I'm teaching, because I need to include the new features of ChatGPT within the teaching. We need to see how we can integrate this new methods, new technologies, what's positive, what can we take from them, how we can adapt it to help me reach out my goals.
So does your strategy of kindness have a specific call out or objective to design? Because you keep talking about a design feature of designing a better way, yet again, better, a more applicable way to engage the workforce and become this community of kindness. How do you culture that? Like a pearl, it takes time. So what are the things that make that pearl shiny for you?
Well, I do use a lot of technology within the strategy of kindness. I think that it shows that you can use technology, use it, but adapt it. Maybe you don't need all of these tools. Maybe you need new ones, but let's see how we can improve that decision-making process of what we need to transform, to digitally transform, when. Also include the sustainability component, because once you start with the two of them together, it will only help you on the long run. Data is always a powerful tool for business. But I try to not only use the quantitative side, but the qualitative side of the data. When I work in implementing the strategy of kindness, I try to focus more on that.
I appreciate your detail about that, because I think there's a lot of learning that has to have happen around all these shifting parts that are across every business sector, and really, more importantly, are across every behavioral element, because the technology has seeped around the workplace and now there's expectations from people of how they think they should be able to work in an organization based off experiences outside of the organization.
Yes, that's true.
And where are you again right now?
I am in Malaga in southern Spain.
Is this home?
Yes, it is. It is.
Okay.
But also a lot of movement in the tech space here in Malaga. So with a program to become the Silicon Valley for Europe. Let's keep an eye on Malaga and see where that project leads.
Are there some conferences there that we need to know about?
Yes, there are a lot of conferences. There is Green Cities, Smart Cities. So because we talked about sustainability and digital transformation and putting them together, that's a good event. And every year in June, there is the Digital Enterprise Show. I've participated 3 times already. So you have different technologies, companies coming in from all around the globe.
In the midst of all this technological activity that you are in the middle of, tell me how a strategy of kindness makes the skill making better in an organization.
It all starts by sharing. So when you start sharing with people and building that, you also receive. Expected that it's not going to be a short-term result, but it's a long-term result. And that goes hand in hand with the sustainability strategy, the digital transformation strategy, and it's all connected.
It sounds like you're saying that it has to be an enterprise accepted, an enterprise level event. That these elements have to be woven through the culture, through the organization, combine it with the strategy, the long-term view, the vision, the whole nut roll. Is that right?
It's exactly right. That's why when I implemented, I usually with the first companies that I started to implement the strategy of kindness and that we are working together and collaborating now, maybe we should develop together a fourth C, continue on that note, see where the strategy leads us. They've seen the need of having a different approach, because it gives also the employees a sense of, I am doing something that matters, and automatically increase the efficiency of the team. I feel involved. When I feel involved, of course, I give more.
In a military term, it would be called esprit de corps. Or morale You're talking about those kind of intangible attributes that people have people become something different than the way they showed up. You inspire. So does an organization have to inspire these people in order for this to take effect? Are you saying that onesie twosies, a department, a section of a large organization that finds value here and they can't get the whole enterprise involved because it's above them? Is there a expectation that they can do a micro application to affect their people?
In my opinion, yes. It needs to be an overall feeling and everyone to participate in some shape or form. Of course, you can apply it in just a department. And even if you do apply it in just one team or a department, the mood will spread. So I think that the music will spread. We know that now you want to work for an organization that inspires you. You want to work for an organization that is sustainable. Let's take a look at the people finishing college and university now. It's one of the top things that they will say. I want to work for an organization that is sustainable. I want to work in a technology, but yes, technology for good, technology that makes a difference.
There's more of a social construct in the mindset of the more recent to the earth employees that have a consciousness about them that they want to have an alignment to, a congruency of the concern for X, concern for the environment, concern for people, that sort of thing. So you're buying into a company more so than just getting a job.
Exactly, exactly. You're constructing and building your future. How do you want that company to train you? You won't go to a company that you don't want to train you because you know what their ethical values are.
That's a much needed, I think, change in the ethics. You brought up ethics. The ethics of a company say a lot about what they stand for or even what they don't stand for. I hear what you're saying. That matters to people.
It's what I've noticed. So when applying the strategy of kindness, even if some companies, of course, are reluctant to share their data or information so that you can apply and see, right? But it doesn't matter. We can create a simulation. Let's do a simulation of how you came up with the strategy. How are you going to present it? There are so many ways in which, and you don't even need to go into the data that you have. Let's just analyze this one first call and see where it leads us. What can we detect?
That's interesting. So how do you take responsibility as an organization to be kind?
That's a really good question.
Not only how do you make an organization responsive, I'll just say responsive to its workforce in the element of being kind or providing a kind environment, is that an HR function?
No, I think it's a function for the entire organization.
So are we going to have a kindness officer?
I don't think so. I think each of us can measure and include and detect. I do propose some maybe new KPIs that you can integrate, but I think that each of the departments, each person working can select, can adapt them and just come up with new ideas. For me, I am very much pleased if you don't take any of the solutions that I proposed, but that made you generate something that works for you.
Is there a common personality type that you've seen that adopts this easier than, say, others? Is there a type of person that gloms onto this like naturally and just, oh yeah, of course, yeah, let's do this? Versus those that are like, oh, I'm not buying anything you're selling.
I don't think so. Because if we start with taking a look at the competitive advantage, and each one of us has different views on that, has different points of, they can decide and start working and start improving, and I can learn from them, they can learn from me. So if you are already open to do that, then we are halfway there.
Yeah. Well, I would say the same prescription would apply to knowledge management. It's just like going back to your classroom, right? In a typical classroom, and this is my quote, you'll never reach 100% of the students. If you can, I don't know how you would do it. It probably depends on what you're teaching and what the class is. But I think overall, that's a good round number. If you can reach 60%, I'd say you're awesome. That's awesome. What do you expect in your viewpoint from being a teacher, from having that classroom environment and knowing how people are? What is your absorption rate of number of people? What percentage would you be happy with changing behavior in an organization?
I would be happy with, I want to say a number, but 60, 70%, I would be very happy with that. But I am very happy if I just manage to make them ask questions. Mm. Even if it's in their mind and if I don't know about it, it doesn't matter. If it made you rethink about that part and just ask a question, even if you're asking it in ChatGPT, I don't care. that's also a good skill to have, right? If I manage to do that, I'm happy.
So how are you kind to yourself?
I try to do a lot of activities that can stimulate my creativity and idea-generated process because I really enjoy that. I try to be kind with myself and say, look, you can go out for a walk, disconnect, listen to music. I'm kind to myself because I let myself do all those things.
Well, thank you for going into a personal reflection about that generative effort, that recharging, that recuperating, the regeneration of your own brain cells and creativity. So how do you translate what you just said to an organization? How do you empower people to do just that?
You first need to see what are they keen on doing. Is it something that you can nurture within the environment of your organization? If it is so, but just to be able to create those opportunities. I would like to go in a band with the colleagues from different departments and create music together. Perfect. Create that opportunity. Is there a club for people building cars?
Wait a minute. Now, you're talking about manufacturing adopting this, and I just can't imagine a bunch of assembly line type folks saying, we're going to spend money on what? What? So how do you get that endorsement of installing or bringing forth those opportunities for community to build? How do you translate that to an ROI that somebody at the C level says, oh, we're going to spend $60,000 on X. Yeah, that's worthwhile because what's the output? What's going to change?
Well, it's the same with the data that we were talking about. Let's just do a simulation. Let's do something that is free. Let's see what data we get, if it works, if not.
Give them the space and the architecture that's what we want. The organization is saying, yeah, go communicate, go build community, connect with people. It's a good thing, right? The organization is endorsing it as a good behavior.
Exactly. It could be without any investment. You want to do this activity and you want to take this extra classes and be just kind enough to see it with that person and adjust their working schedule to know that this is a possibility. It could be simple as that. So maybe leaving work earlier, half an hour, so that you can go to band practice or things like that, that could mean a lot. And you're not losing anything. You're just gaining.
But you know what I'm saying. There's somebody with some numbers going to be saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. They're not building widgets. They're doing something. What? And we're paying them? Let's go to your idea of like, we give them a half an hour, paid half hour to cover whatever the activity is. Somebody somewhere is going to say, hey, how do you defend that? How do you convert somebody that is against spending money, better word, investing money in their workforce in this new way?
What if you translate that data and you put it into the ESG reporting on the social side of taking care of your employees? And you get better ratings, or the investors are going to see that you are doing work in that sense. if they just want to see that raw data and the return their investment, you can see it.
And it goes back to what you said about the new hiring paradigm, in which the employee now has a perspective of who and why they want to do anything to get paid for an organization. There's a change in the workforce that that expectation is now foremost. So to go to your ROI point, then that would weigh heavy to show, hey, these are the kind of people we want to hire, but they care about this. If we don't show that, then we're not going to get those folks.
Exactly. Exactly. So I want to have that option, to have that time. So if I want to teach on the side, I can do that.
What's your definition of knowledge management?
That's a really good question. I would say fostering creativity and the art of asking questions.
Well, thank you, my friend, Dr. Leila, all the way from Spain. I appreciate all the time and effort you put into this and sharing your knowledge.
Likewise, likewise. Thank you for making me a part of this, and I had a really, really good time.
You have just finished our latest Because You Need to Know, a public service of Pioneer Knowledge Services. Please join us on LinkedIn and find us at pioneer-ks.org.
Thank you for listening to Because You Need to Know, the reference podcast in knowledge management. My name is Sony Toneme. As an art administrator, Because You Need to Know has been my go-to podcast and has helped me hone my management skills. Please consider sponsoring the podcast with your business.